Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures. For more than 50 years, the museum has told stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character. Details at texancultures.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Have you ever searched for something online that you were thinking about buying? Hey, maybe it might be cool to own a kayak. Then you hop over to Facebook, and then, boy, there's kayaks everywhere, a bunch of ads. You go to your favorite blog, and there are those ads again, more kayaks. This is just an example of what you do online, how it's not private or not limited, and what you do online is up for sale. California has a new data privacy law, and it's impacting us here in Texas. What do we need to know about that law, and why is this happening? What do you need to know about your data privacy online? And lots of ways for you to join our conversation. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And you could email us your questions and comments at thesource@tpr.org, tweet at us at tprsource. We're joined this hour by Mary Stone Ross, Associate Director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, co-author of the California Consumer Privacy Act. Mary Stone Ross, great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
With us also, Bennett Cyphers, staff technologist for the Electronic Frontier Foundation, author of a recent report about big tech's personal data trackers. Bennett Cyphers, hey, how are you?
Good. Thank you so much for having me on.
And also with us, Jeffrey Fowler, the technology columnist for the Washington Post. And Jeffrey Fowler, great to have you.
Glad to be here. It's like the Avengers of personal data privacy, so it's going to be a good hour.
I said we'll watch out for the snap. So, Mary Stone Ross, if you could tell us about what is in this California Consumer Privacy Act and why should we be interested here in Texas?
Absolutely. So, at its core, the CCPA is like a Freedom of Information Act, but for private companies. So now if you're a resident of California, you can go to a company and say, what do you know about me? And so you might have seen recently that you're getting lots of updates to privacy policies, and maybe they say for California residents. So what we are now requiring businesses to do is disclose in plain English what they are collecting about you, what they're doing with that information. So, for example, if they're selling it or sharing it with affiliates, and then give you ways to take back control, including the ability to opt out of the sale of your personal information. And so what you might also see is a button on a lot of pages that says, do not sell my personal information. If you're a Californian, you can click on that link, and the business is supposed to opt you out of the sale of your personal information.
But only if you're a Californian.
That's correct. Now, some businesses are choosing to extend those rights outside of the state of California, but right now those protections only cover Californians.
Other states, are they looking at this?
Yes, absolutely. New York has introduced their own version of the CCPA. Nevada has a privacy law that doesn't go quite as far as the CCPA. And then, of course, the big question is, what is Congress going to do?
So, Bennett Cyphers with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, why was this law needed?
So this is the first law of its kind in the United States. We've seen other laws in other countries, especially the GDPR, which went into effect last year, that have started to rein in the behaviors of trackers and data brokers. But in the U.S., it was really a wild west without any kind of regulation. And especially in the sense of, like, there was just no way for average people to know what was happening. And so it was up to, like, journalists and researchers and nonprofits to, like, do real digging to figure out what data was even being collected. And then after that, like, in terms of getting control of what is happening to that data, there were really no legal rights at all for most Americans.
Jeffrey Fowler, you've been at CES this week, the Consumer Electronics Show, and as a columnist for the Washington Post. And as I understand it, last year you were there and you saw that Apple had a huge billboard up that said what happens on your iPhone stays in your iPhone or something like that. And is that true? And is that more true or less true now?
It turns out that is not true. After I saw that billboard, at CES last year, I did a little experiment where I looked at all of the data that was flowing out of my phone while I slept at night, and it turned out that a lot of it was being sent to third-party tracking companies I had never heard of through the apps that I had installed on my phone. So this year at CES, Apple actually had its first official presence at the big tech convention in several decades, and they were on a panel about privacy. So I was first in line to ask them a question, and I said, hey, what are you doing now to make that claim true? And their answer was, they didn't really have an answer. And so I think we're in this situation now where it's a particularly confusing time for listeners, for consumers, for us as citizens, because we see a lot of companies making claims about privacy. And I sort of call this privacy washing, right, where they'll say, oh, we give you control or we do this. But are we really more in control? So hopefully we can help listeners sort through some of these claims today.
So, but Jeff, the Apple says that they are doing a good job on their apps on the phone, but some of these other third-party apps, they really have a very limited control over what they do, because this is happening.
Well, sure. So the line that Apple is drawing right now, they say, well, we have apps that are made and services that are made by Apple, things like iMessage and iCloud. And for those, they say they go to great pains to either encrypt the data so they can't see it or to not collect it. But when we talk about the responsibility of these tech companies, Apple makes this app store, right, where it makes a lot of money by selling us apps. And each one of those apps is supposedly reviewed by Apple, and they're supposedly vetting them for their behavior. And it turns out that they don't really vet them that well when it comes to privacy.
Mary Stone Ross, some people make the argument that this is something that most Americans really don't care about. They just want to have good products, and they're happy to have their information tossed about so they can get the ads that are applied to them.
I think the people who are making that argument are the same people who want to continue to collect and sell your personal information. I think that it's a false argument, and we've seen that both with internal polling. Pew Research came out with a lot of data points that Americans really do care about who's collecting their information. And so now, thankfully, we have a tool that Californians can use to find out what information is being collected about them, and so that you don't have to have the resources available of a journalist, although we're still going to be very dependent upon them to bring to light a lot of these information collection practices.
And in the ramp up to the passage of this law, a lot of debate and a lot of naysayers and doom forecast that this was going to kill the industry in California and all this other. Has anything like that come to happen?
Shockingly, no. And that was my first tweet this year, was that January 1st, came about, and the internet still exists. So I think that it will change business practices, especially as people become more aware about the extent of their information tracking, but also as more people opt out of the sale of their personal information. I think that the source and the of a lot of this of information will dry up.
Yeah, that was kind of my first tweet, too, because actually I was still waiting for Y2K to happen. 20 years later, it still hasn't happened. All right, so we're going to take a break here. We're going to continue our conversation talking about data tracking your personal information. The operative word there is yours. It belongs to you, or does it? Who owns it? Who controls it? Who makes money off it? You should have a say in that, but do you, particularly here in Texas? Could Texas learn something from this law in California? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. What do you want to see happen? What are your concerns? 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about data tracking. We've got an all-star panel here, experts and people who are on the forefront, on the bleeding edge of trying to protect your information online. We've got a question or a comment. The number is 210-614-8980. Rex is on the line. And Rex, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you, David. This is a great subject. My question is for Mary. My fear is that even though you're protected when you connect to a site using a URL, you're not protected when you connect to that same site through the app, which the app is then enabled to also collect your information, which most people aren't using URLs to connect anymore. They're going directly through the app to connect to websites. So I was wondering if the law in California is addressing the collection of information through apps as well as what's being collected online, because most people don't realize that their information is being collected by way of online and also through the app.
All right. Rex, thank you for the question. Mary Stone Ross is with the Electronic Privacy Information Center.
Rex, that's an excellent question. And when we drafted the CCPA, we actually had in mind that we wanted to cover the collection of information no matter who was doing it or how was doing it, how they were doing it. So whether it's online, through an app, or even through a physical store. So for example, if you're walking around a Safeway and they're collecting your personal information as you're walking around that store, then that is also covered by the CCPA. So again, you're allowed to find out what they're collecting about you, and then if the store is selling that personal information, no matter whether they're a technology company or a real retailer, they must give you the option to opt out of the sale of that personal information.
Jeff Fowler with the Washington Post, technology columnist, when you did your experiment looking at those at that app activity at night, one thing that astonished me was how much data they were using to report back to, I guess, the mothership about me. It was a lot.
It was a lot of data. And I think, you know, when we talk about, well, who cares? What's the hurt of all of this? One thing that actually doesn't come up nearly often enough is that it actually worsens the battery life on our devices because they're transferring so much data, and also eats away at our data plans. I mean, I could have eaten through an entire sort of standard AT&T data plan very quickly with just the tracking data that was being sent through my iPhone. So we're kind of in a nuts situation right now. So we really need to bring new light to this stuff.
So not only are they, you know, ratting me out, but they're stealing my data plan stuff. You know, that's, and I got to pay for that. So that's right out of my pocket.
There's a real cost to consumers here, and there's many different kinds of costs, and we should talk about, you know, some of the other ones. It's also about control over your own life and the power you have over your own life. I mean, think of it this way. You would never go to a used car salesman to try to negotiate for a new used car by first giving the used car salesman access to your bank account, right? You'd never do that. Then they would know exactly how much you can pay. But essentially, that's what we're doing through all kinds of interactions with businesses these days, because they've been surveilling us, peering into our lives, so they know us. In some cases, they know what we want even before we do. So the balance of power is really just totally off now.
And Bennett Cyphers with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, you did a report on that called, what is it, the one-way mirror? What was it?
Yeah, behind the one-way mirror.
Okay, what does that mean?
So this is, we were trying to come up with an analogy to kind of capture what it's like to live in the modern day and like interact with companies today. And we thought that this was kind of apt because it's like, there are like, you look at your phone or you look at your computer screen and you can see a website, you see an app, you see social media, you see what the companies want you to see. But what you don't see is the, hundreds or thousands of different companies that are tracking you in different ways and sharing that data behind the scenes. So it's as if every time you interact with an electronic device these days, there is a whole gang of like corporate investigators standing behind a one-way mirror peering in at what you're doing.
I kind of feel like I'm in an episode of Law and Order and I'm being interrogated and they have a bunch of prosecutors on the other side of that one-way mirror and they're, you know, figuring out, you know, how to pin the crime on me. And in this case, they're well, trying to figure out how to manufacture consent or to get me to do all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. Most of the time they're just trying to pin an ad click on you, but it's not a whole lot less nefarious.
Okay. All right. Let's go back to the phone lines, 210-614-8980 with Michael. Michael, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello, David. Thank you for airing this program. This is so vital to all of us. I am often startled at how the big data anticipates my thinking as I'm online or on my phone. Is there any place we can go to find out what big data actually knows about us as individuals?
All right, Michael, let me go to back to Bennett Cyphers for that, Electronic Frontier Foundation. Can I figure out how much they know about me?
So short answer, yes, kind of. And the work of Mary Stone Ross and the other people behind CCPA has really made it so that you have a lot more ways that you can figure that kind of a thing out now than you did in the very recent past. But one of the big problems is, so like there are certain companies, especially Google and Facebook, like the bigger ones that have interfaces where you can go on and like ask, what data do you have about me? And they'll give you a lot of it. They won't give you everything, but they'll give you most of it. And I encourage people to do that, to go onto Google and Facebook and go through their interface where you can download all of your data. And it'll be many, many gigabytes. And you'll be kind of astounded, I think, if you haven't done it before. But those aren't the only companies that are collecting data about you. There are hundreds and thousands of smaller companies and like subsidiaries of other big companies that you might not think are even in the data collection game that are collecting data about you, a lot of times enabled by the biggest players like Google and Facebook. And so now under the California Consumer Privacy Act, California residents have the right to go to those smaller companies and say like, hey, what do you have about me? But a lot of times normal people don't even know which companies they're supposed to go to. And I think that's a really big problem that we still have kind of yet to address, is just mapping out this whole ecosystem of the shadowy companies that only operate behind the scenes that you haven't heard of, that you never interact with directly.
Mary Stone Ross, I mean, I did click the little box that on the user agreement when I bought that whatever. Doesn't that say I agree to all this?
No, it doesn't. And so first of all, I just wanted to return, even if you're in Texas and not in California, I would recommend searching for the section that says your California privacy rights, because a business that's collecting your personal information has to disclose by category what they're collecting about you. So not in legalese that we usually see in privacy policies, but they have to say if they're collecting, for example, your geographic location or biometric information. So I think that will be eye-opening. The second piece is that if you are in California, it doesn't matter if you have a direct relationship with a business or not, but that if you go to them and say, what do you know about me, they have to tell you. So, for example, Facebook, which uses tracking pixels to create digital dossiers on people, whether or not you have a Facebook account, you can now go to them, even if you do not have a Facebook account, and say, what do you know about me? And they have to return the information about what they've collected about you.
And so what about that consent? Is it is that real consent? If I checked when I sign up for an app and they want access to everything about me and I say yes, then what recourse do I have if I went ahead and clicked that box?
So it's right now it is certainly not consent. I think there's an expectation gap between what we think these businesses are collecting about us and then in fact what they are collecting about us and how they're using it. And so now hopefully because of the transparency portion of the CCPA, we will actually make a conscientious decision on whether or not to click that accept button. And then just the further point is just because we accept the collection of personal information, which the CCPA won't allow you to opt out of the collection of your personal information. However, we're not agreeing to the sale of our personal information. And so that's the further control that the CCPA will grant Californians to opt out of that sale.
But like just today, I went on Twitter and it's like this video I wanted to see and I click on it and then it pops up. If to see the video, I have to agree that Twitter is going to have access to my information. And I really wanted to see that guy throw the beer at the Spurs bench. And so, you know, I clicked yes. But, you know, I'm kind of like going and then it didn't even play the video. But I feel like I got ripped off.
Right. And I mean, the CCPA is certainly not a perfect law, and it won't stop a business from collecting your personal information. The difference is that they have to tell you if they're doing it and then give you recourse if they are selling it to stop that sale.
Jeff Fowler with the Washington Post, you say if you have a bunch of apps on your phone that you really don't use, should we do a clearing, clean the house?
Yeah, that's like one of the basic steps that I tell folks to do if you want to assert a little more control. Do a regular audit of your phone and look at that app. Remember the face app that was popular over the summer? You might have used that for a minute and then decided, oh, I don't need that anymore.
It was going to show me what I looked like when I got old, which is like already.
Indeed. If you just delete these things, because the less access to your data, the better off you are. But I think one of the points that's kind of emerging here is that the tech industry has actually filled our lives with really kind of false choices here, right? They've said like, oh, well, if you want the great conveniences and amazing capabilities of technology and artificial intelligence and all the other things they're developing, then you have to allow us to surveil you. You have to allow us to mine your life for marketing and other purposes. And that simply is not true. That is not the way that technology had to develop. It's just the business models that this industry has at the moment really focused on. And so what I'm hoping is through laws like CCPA and maybe some national laws and maybe just generally consumers kind of like raising their fist and saying, no, this isn't okay, but we're going to see some newer business models that maybe don't rely on surveilling us just to allow us to have cool new tech possibilities.
Right, but Jeff, then does that mean that I will get a bill from Facebook if they can't sell my information and I'm no longer their product? They got to figure out how to generate all that income, keep the stock up.
Maybe. Yeah, it's possible. And I've actually said that Facebook ought to charge us for what they're doing, and we'll have to decide as a society what our data is worth, what we will, what we're willing to pay for. But right now, we don't even get that choice in most of the cases.
Mary Stone Ross, were there some provisions in the law that you helped shepherd in California, the California Consumer Privacy Act, that prevented companies from doing some sort of clap back at consumers who say, you can't not sell my information?
Yes. So in the law, there's a non-discrimination provision that says that if you as a Californian exercise any of your rights under the law, a business is not allowed to discriminate against you. So backing up a little bit, the CCPA was an initiative before it was passed through the state legislature. The initiative went even further than what the legislative CCPA does, but the non-discrimination language is still there. Unfortunately, there is a second provision that does say that a business is allowed to deny you access or charge you more if you opt out of the sale of your personal information. But that difference has to be related to the value of the information to the business. So we'll see in practice how that plays out. I think that the other piece is that a lot of these platforms, they want us on there. And so I think that they might, even though they can charge you, they might not be inclined to do so because it's just valuable to have engagement and users on their platform.
So they can still advertise. They can still advertise to me in sort of a general way, but not just direct advertisement specifically at the things I have talked about online, right, Mary?
I think there is a difference between contextual advertisement and behavioral advertisement. Contextual advertisement will be allowed no matter what. So if I'm reading about cars, I can see car advertisements. Behavioral advertisements based on my online behavior or offline behavior, if you opt out of the sale of your personal information, will no longer be allowed.
All right, so we're taking another break. Our phone lines are open. We've got some callers here. We'll get them on the air. The number is 210-614-8980. We're talking about data tracking and you. You are a product online. Your information is being harvested and sold, and it's valuable. How much control should you have over that? Should that information belong to you? The number is 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this.
Comedian and actor Cristela Alonso wants to make you laugh, but she also wants to make you think.
Now, why is it when you have a policy that affects the marginalized community, it doesn't get the attention until someone that's white has the same thought.
Plus, a remembrance of a Latino civil rights leader. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about data tracking and you online and information on the breadcrumbs that you leave online and where do they lead. And it could lead to you directly, and you may not want to be followed. If you've got questions or comments, the number is 210-614-8980. So I'm going to play this email, this voicemail from a listener.
Talking about online privacy, my name is David, and I'd like to say I use the Firefox browser on my PCs and with an extension called NoScript. What it does is block all JavaScripts by default, and most sites require JavaScript to run, but what happens is you have third-party JavaScripts such as doubleclick.net and 207.net, Google Tag Manager, etc., that are running in the background, and they're doing the tracking and throwing ads at you. And this one allows you to selectively allow JavaScripts to run.
Okay, let me go to Bennett Cyphers to get your reaction on that, Electronic Frontier Foundation expert. What about that? Those practices?
Sure, yeah. So first of all, I think Firefox, for most people who are concerned about privacy, using Firefox browser is a good kind of like very user-friendly but still pretty effective way to start protecting yourself from trackers. So to back up a little bit, the vast majority of tracking that happens on the web when you're using a browser happens via these things called cookies, specifically third-party cookies. And these are little pieces of information that your browser lets any website, but especially third-party websites, drop into your browser. And then the next time you connect to those websites, your browser will share that piece of information with them, which lets them say like, oh, this is the same user that I saw before, therefore I can connect their visit on this site to their visit on a different site. And then over time, the tracker can build up your sort of browsing history, like where you browse and when and what kinds of things you do on each website. And that's a really powerful data source that lets them derive things about your behavior and demographics and everything else. So anyway, Firefox blocks cookies from known third-party trackers by default, which is a really powerful technique. And they just started doing that a couple months ago. But there are other ways, as the caller referenced, that trackers can track you. A lot of those ways actually use JavaScript. So there's this technique called browser fingerprinting, which is where a tracker will run a little piece of code in your browser, a little piece of JavaScript. It'll gather as much information as it can from your browser, from random things like, I don't know, your graphics card, like how many pixels are on your screen, the kinds of fonts you have installed, just kind of the little detritus of information all around. Just a lot of it is the ways that your browser specifically works. And what trackers have found is that if they assemble all of that information, all those little random data points they can gather from your browser and put it together into one profile, that is enough to uniquely identify your browser. So even if you're blocking cookies, a tracker can actually still gather enough information about your browser to say, this is one specific person in the world. I know who they are. I know I've seen them before. And therefore, I can build a profile of them and use that profile to target ads at them. So blocking all scripts with an extension like NoScript by default is an effective way to stop that. I think for a lot of people who are less tech savvy, it's might be a little bit overkill because as the caller mentioned, pretty much every site, every modern website uses JavaScript. And so if you turn off JavaScript by default, you're gonna find yourself having to fiddle with the settings a lot in order to get a lot of sites that are pretty innocuous to just work how they're supposed to. So the Electronic Frontier Foundation, my organization, develops a browser extension called Privacy Badger. And that goes a little bit further than what Firefox does by default. It actually has ways of detecting when third-party sites are tracking you, and that whether that's using cookies or using browser fingerprinting or using another technique called local storage super cookies. And so if it notices that a site is, or that a particular domain is tracking you on multiple different first-party websites, it will automatically start blocking all requests that your browser would make to that domain. So that domain can't even load the scripts or the code into your browser because Privacy Badger doesn't let it make requests at all. So I would recommend for most people, we try and make Privacy Badger really user-friendly and just kind of install and forget. There are other options like uBlock. There's an extension called uBlock Origin, which does something pretty similar to what Privacy Badger does. And so if you use Firefox and you use an extension like Privacy Badger or like uBlock, I'd say that will stop the vast majority of tracking that happens in your browser, including the more nefarious things like fingerprinting, with really minimal headache for the average person.
Jeffrey Fowler with the Washington Post. I know you've written about the privacy concerns for the Google Chrome browser. Is it enough to, like, if you clear your cache, you eliminate those cookies? Is that going to protect you from this?
No. In fact, and it's funny, when I did another experiment, we talked about my iPhone experiment earlier, I did another experiment that Bennett actually helped me with, where I tracked to see what was going on in the Chrome browser, which is by far the world's most popular, most used web browser. And there I found thousands and thousands of companies were setting cookies on my computer to track what I was doing. You know, I think Google has designed Chrome in a way that really makes it a surveillance machine, and I highly recommend that readers who care about this stuff either use Firefox, or if you're an Apple person, Safari also takes steps to help protect you by default without you having to know a ton about it. But just doing things like every once in a while remembering to clear your cookies, or doing things like turning on incognito mode or private browsing mode, that isn't really going to protect you either, particularly when you're using Chrome.
Got an email from Becky. I'm told when researching airline flights, for example, I should use my browser's private window. In that window, I will not be identified to the airline and will not know I'm shopping around, and this won't change their prices on subsequent visits. Is this true? And if it is, it seems like I should use this private window all the time for my online activity. Is Mary Stone Ross, do you know about that?
I think probably Jeffrey or Bennett would be better suited to answer that. But the one point I did want to make is that I second the Privacy Badger for EFF. It's a great browser extension. It makes it really easy. But what I have noticed in California as I try to opt out of the sale of my personal information, I've had to disable Privacy Badger in order to do so. And the reason for that is that certain sites, including TripAdvisor, are using Solve Media's tool reCAPTCHA in order to let me opt out of the sale of my personal information. And so what a lot of people don't realize is that the little reCAPTCHA button that you check to say, I'm not a robot, is actually a data broker. And what they're doing is they're connecting the fact that you are a human to your IP address or your credit card information or whatever other pieces of information that they can collect on you when you're on certain websites. And then going back to the issue of consent, I need to click on that in order to complete a transaction. So that is certainly not consenting to the use and further sale of my personal information.
But Bennett Cypher's shopping for airline tickets, that does seem like something where all this information could be used against you to manipulate prices. Does that happen?
Yeah, I think it does happen. But I haven't done extensive research into that in particular. But to the question earlier about opening up a new like private browsing window or incognito window, I think the thing a lot of people don't realize is when you open up one of those windows, it doesn't actually, well, at least in Chrome, it doesn't actually affect how the browser works at all. So it doesn't stop the companies from tracking you at all. It doesn't stop them from fingerprinting you. It doesn't stop them from connecting your IP address to your activity. All it does is kind of creates a new session, which won't have the same cookies as your other session. And so if the airline company is only using cookies to track you and to like manipulate prices for you in particular, then that might work sometimes, but it's definitely not a reliable way to protect yourself from tracking.
And what is fingerprinting?
So fingerprinting is, I was trying to describe it a little earlier. Sorry, it's a little bit subtle, but it's basically when a tracker runs code in your browser or just collects information from your browser that your browser kind of just leaks without intending to. So that might be one of the most common ways it does it is with fonts. So like you have a bunch of fonts installed on your computer and what a tracker can do is like open up an invisible little window kind of in the background of a page and try and write text over and over again in a bunch of different fonts and then like take a picture of that, kind of grab the pixels that get rendered invisibly in the background and send that back to the tracking server and
try and that's crazy.
Use that as like a unique identifier for your device. And there are a lot of other pieces of information that go into that too.
And a beacon, I'm reading about beacons as well. Is that something else we need to be worried about? Real quick.
Sure, yeah. So beacons are just, they're like little, a lot of times they're pixels or they're little pieces of code that run on a page that are completely invisible. They're not associated with an ad or a piece of content or an image or anything. They're, and you're, when a page includes a beacon, that beacon will trigger a request to a third party. So it's like you go to.
So these are the things that people should, these things are out there. We should know about them. We should defend ourselves. Got to take one more break. The number is 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Daves. We're talking about data tracking and you. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. And Carol is on the line. And Carol, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just wondering, say you're a person with too much time on your hands and no life, so you decide to visit a number of places on the web that have nothing to do with you, your interests, or your life. Is it possible to invalidate the data they're collecting on you to the degree that it's not worth collecting in the first place?
All right, throw up a smoke screen. Does that work, Jeffrey Fowler?
I love it. This is exactly the sort of thinking that you think like a journalist or like a hacker. But yeah, I mean, if you could go in and somehow convince Google that you have the interests of, you know, dozens and dozens of different kinds of people, its systems wouldn't work as well. Of course, that's a lot of work to take on to do. But there is this idea in privacy that what we need to do is just sort of obfuscate who we are by sending up lots of bad information.
And when I go on YouTube, I see a lot of the same sort of videos over and over again, you know, and it kind of gets boring. Why don't they shake that up and get rid of all of my preferences? Because I like to discover new things. I mean, isn't that a problem, Jeff?
Well, you can go in the case of Google and, you know, tell it to delete or clear out some of what they think your preferences are. But look, these companies have made billions and billions and billions of dollars by you know, tuning in to what they think you want to see next, what information they think you want to see. And for most people, it seems to work, but we are having a vigorous conversation nationally about whether these algorithms, these feeds that we've let take over our information are really, in fact, putting us into kind of echo chambers where we don't actually get a diverse set of information anymore. So there's a whole other conversation about that, too.
Mary Stone Ross, do you think Americans or everyone who is online, and that is everyone, is waking up that this is happening, I care about this, and I'm going to demand some sort of accountability?
Without a doubt. I mean, I think that's why you see more and more people using ad blockers or using browsers that do hide their identity or coming up with ways to obfuscate who they are. Unfortunately, it's equally becoming harder and harder as a lot of these companies are employing more and more ways to track us. But I'm hoping that now that the CCPA is in effect and we'll have more information about what businesses are doing, I think that there will be more pressure on other states and on Congress
to grant the privacy protection rights to all Americans.
So I got this email, Mary Stone Ross, you can help me with this. I was upset with my solar panels because of the app and portal. Both of these require me to waive rights to legal protections and to consent to unspecified third-party monitoring. I did not agree to the terms, but now I can't monitor my solar production. I really wish these web terms were disclosed before I had my expensive panels installed.
I can completely relate with the caller, and I think things like this are going to change, because instead of hiding it in terms of service, they have to disclose before you sign up for a service. We use it's called Ratio. It's like a web-connected sprinkler control system, and sure enough, I got their privacy policy today. They don't have a do not sell my personal information button, but I did a little digging, and guess what? They are.
And that's part of the problem. You know, I wonder how trustworthy or how much deception is going on there, Mary.
So remember, a part of this law is also enforcement. So that won't begin until July, but the Attorney General of the State of California is in charge of enforcing the CCPA. And so I am hoping that they are going to make examples of certain companies and also make businesses change their practices.
But so if a consumer sues an app for tracking their information and using information, selling that information, are they able going to, is there enough value there as a party, suing party, to actually make the courts get involved? You're going to say, well, it's only like $20, you know, that they got out of you.
This is something that comes up a lot in the context of privacy litigation, but it's also why at EPIC that we are advocating strongly for a federal data protection agency so that to protect consumers from these privacy abuses, because the problem is just so widespread right now.
Jeffrey Fowler with the Washington Post, technology columnist, the Internet of Things, all of these, my crock pot is going to be talking to my cat's, cat box these days. And they use a language, I understand it's called Carrot, there's all sorts of, but how much security is involved in that? My Nest, my Ring phone, my Ring doorbell is spying on me as well?
Yeah, you know, we've been very focused over the last decade on the cool new capabilities that come when you connect things, everyday things to the internet, your doorbell, your thermostat and whatnot. And we're really right now starting to wake up to some of the downsides of that, you know, and one of those downsides is, well, anything that's on the internet could potentially be hacked. That data could be stolen. And a lot of people are not sort of doing enough to protect the data. We've had some incidents recently with those Ring doorbells and other webcams where people didn't really use very strong passwords to protect them, and hackers went and figured it out, and next thing you know, they have a portal into your living room. So that's one problem. The other problem is that these things are also surveillance devices, right? They're collecting a ton of data about what goes on with your family, what's going on in your home. And a lot of these companies collect that data and store it kind of indefinitely. Like if you've got one of those really, really popular Nest thermostats, did you know it has a presence sensor in it that notes whether there's somebody in the house in like 15-minute increments? And Nest, which is now owned by Google, stores that forever and ever and ever. And also, if you connected that thermostat to a Google Home speaker or to an Amazon Alexa device, they also get a copy of all that data. So we're allowing really big tech companies to collect very fine-grained dossiers about what goes on in our homes. So this is, again, part of the conversation we need to be having that CCPA is helping with to say, like, you know, what do they know about us, and is that okay for them to know?
Sometimes, and I don't know if this is this imagination or what, but Bennett Cyphers, help me here. You're just talking to a friend about something, maybe a show or something you want to go to, and then you go online, and right there is an ad for it. I didn't search for it. I didn't put it in Google, but there it is. I mean, am I in is that all this happening there?
So this is a question we actually get a lot, very frequently, and a lot of people do have anecdotes about how they were talking about something, like they mentioned diapers, and all of a sudden they start seeing diaper ads, and they don't have any kids or anything like that. But we haven't ever seen any evidence that the big companies are actually doing that. And actually, there's compelling reasons that they wouldn't be doing that. The first one being that they don't need to. Like, they can actually gather so much data from other things that aren't your actual voice, like your location, your browsing history, your habits, and extrapolate from that, that most of the time, adding in your actual voice to the mix wouldn't be that much of a help to them. The other thing is there are some laws, federal and state wiretapping laws, that would probably go into effect in a lot of those situations. So like if companies, big companies like Amazon or Apple or Google were actually listening into you without any kind of consent, even the barest nod towards it, that would probably be illegal in a lot of jurisdictions.
But Jeff Fowler at the Washington Post, didn't you write about how you have to tell your device, this is not for you, don't stop listening to me, or they're always listening.
Yeah, so if you've got in your home one of these smart speakers, so this is an Amazon Echo device with Alexa, or a Google Home, you know, a Google Assistant device, or there are other ones as well, you should understand a couple of things about them. We'll take the Amazon one because it's the most popular. Like, they're designed so that they are always listening. Now, they're designed, they are listening for their wake word, which in the case of Amazon is the word Alexa. But the truth is they go off sometimes even when you didn't intend for them to. I went back and I listened to 4 years of what the Amazon Echo in my home had been collecting about me, and it went off a lot of times when I was watching television. For some reason, it went off a lot during Downton Abbey. It went off when friends were talking about medication. All kinds of sensitive conversations actually ended up being recorded. And the other thing I think a lot of people who have these devices don't realize is that by default, Amazon keeps those recordings forever and ever and ever. You can go in and delete them after the fact, but you can't tell Amazon to not keep them in the first place. So again, it's this false choice we're given, right? You either have to allow Amazon to keep these recordings of your house or just not have the advantage of a voice assistant.
And that just seems like that's who would want to have that. If you knew exactly what you were signing up for, would you sign up for that? Mary Stone Ross, do you think people bring these products into their homes not aware of what they're doing?
My husband actually brought an Alexa home, and I made him get rid of it. But with that said, I walk around with my Apple Watch that is constantly prompting me to talk to Siri. So, you know, I think the truth of it is that it's convenience that is going to be the death of ourselves and how much we care about privacy to a certain extent. But I think that as we do have these tools like the CCPA and then hopefully a federal bill, that there will be ways to regain control over the collection of our information. And I think there will also be pressure on businesses not to always be listening to us, because I think there are certain bright lines, including the sanctity of our home, that we want to keep private.
Sure, and what we do in our cars, as our cars get smarter and more integrated, that's also a concern. I mean, in 20 seconds, Bennett, is that something that people are following? Because the cars are right there too.
Yeah, a lot of cars are collecting a lot of information, your location, your driving habits.
And even the conversations that you have inside the car, that's also going to be tracked. All right, I want to thank all of our guests, Mary Stone Ross with the Electronic Privacy Information Center, Bennett Cyphers, Electronic Frontier Foundation, and Jeffrey Fowler. He's a technology correspondent with the Washington Post. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.